Everyone, and welcome to the Diablo Canyon Annual Assessment Meeting for the calendar year 2009. My name is Kenneth Bailey, and I will be the facilitator for this evening. It is my goal to ensure that tonight's meeting is productive and beneficial to all attending. We hope you had a chance to attend the open house sessions in the adjoining room earlier today. For those of you who were not able to attend, we will have a second open house immediately following this evening's meeting, where you'll have the opportunity to speak directly with the subject matter experts in the area of license renewal, security, seismic, radiation protection, and spent fuel. We're going to do things slightly different tonight from what we've done in the past. We'll start off tonight's annual meeting with PG&E and NRC open to public observation. Following this meeting, we will have a town hall in which the staff will be available to answer questions, receive comments after the business portion of the meeting, but before the meeting is adjourned. We have received some cards for questions and comments. If you do not have a card, please raise your hand and we will ensure that you get a card to make your comment or question. When you get the card, please ensure that you write clearly your room, the room outside to our right. If you have not signed in, we ask that before you depart that you please sign in. One of the attendance forms available at the back of the room or just outside. The attendance roster will be attached to the meeting summary prepared after the meeting and will become a part of the public record. Another administrative note, there are also feedback forms which most if not all of you have received prior to coming in. We would appreciate you taking the time to complete the feedback form and return it to us to assist us in our continuing effort to provide more meaningful meetings with our stakeholders. At this time, I will now turn the meeting over to Mr. Jeffrey Miller, Branch Chief for Diablo Canyon.
Thank you, Ken. As Ken mentioned, my name is Jeff Miller. I'm the branch chief with the oversight responsibility for the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. I'm based out of Arlington, Texas. I'd like to introduce the folks who are with me here tonight. We have Dr. Michael Peck on the end, who is the senior resident inspector at the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. Also to my right is Tony Brown, who is the resident inspector at Diablo Canyon. Both Tony and Michael live here in the area and perform daily inspections and monitoring the activities at the Diablo Canyon plant. On my left is Troy Pruitt, who is the Deputy Director of the Division of Reactor Safety. He's also based in Arlington, Texas. Mr. Peters, I'd like to take a moment to introduce the members of PG&E present.
Yes, it will. Thank you. I am Ken Peters. I'm the Diablo Canyon Station Director. And to my left is Mr. Lauren Sharp. He is the Senior Director of Engineering Services at Diablo Canyon Power Plant.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Dr. Michael Peck.
Good evening. As Mr. Miller indicated, Tony and myself, we both resident inspectors at the Diablo Canyon plant. We work there every day, and we both are residents of San Luis Obispo County. As resident inspectors, our primary focus is really in three areas. We do provide a daily presence, daily oversight at the plant for the agency. We act as the agency's eyes and ears for day-to-day operations. We conduct an in-depth. Before I go into that, I want to provide just a little bit, very briefly, our regulatory framework as a background to our assessment process. And just very briefly, we use what's called the reactor oversight process. This process relies on two major inputs. The first one is performance indicators, and the second is inspection findings. Now, performance indicators are predetermined qualitative indicators of specific plant parameters or plant conditions that have a direct nexus to nuclear safety. For an example, we would monitor the availability of an important accident mitigation system as a performance indicator. Or we might evaluate the reactor coolant radiation levels or the amount that the reactor coolant may be leaking in regard to the ability to act as a barrier. These performance indicators have various thresholds based on their relationship to the particular safety performance measure that they're related to. We use a color-coded system here at the NRC for performance indicators. Green, meaning that all the safety attributes of that particular performance indicator are being met. And then white, yellow, and then increasing to red, indicating a more significant safety problem. Now, in addition to the performance indicators, we also perform direct inspections. The inspection program is designed to focus on those safety significant attributes that's not directly or indirectly reflected in one of our performance indicators. Tony and myself perform a lot of direct inspection, but we're also supplemented by subject matter experts out of our Arlington, Texas office. During 2009, we performed over 2,700 hours of direct inspection at Diablo Canyon. We had subject matter experts come out in the area of maintenance, operations, engineering, radiation protection, refueling, security, and emergency preparedness. Now, during the course of an inspection, an inspector may identify a performance deficiency. And this performance deficiency could lend itself to an inspection finding. These inspection findings are... The action matrix is a tool that we use to communicate the results of our assessment process. The intent of both the assessment program in conjunction with the action matrix is to provide consistent, predictable agency responses to licensee, to communicate agency responses to licensee performance. Now this matrix has a number of columns over here. And the first column here is what we call licensee response column. So a plant that has all green performance indicators and all green inspection findings falls under this category. And if you look during the break very closely, basically this category says risk-informed baseline inspection program. So we continue to do the basic inspection program that we do at all plants for licensees that fall under this category. Then as safety issues begin to manifest themselves in either risk significant peak performance indicators or inspection findings, then that plant assessment results goes into further right columns here in the action matrix, which warrant additional NRC response. I'd really like to go to the next slide. All right, I'm sorry. So for the our assessment results of Pacific Gas and Electric, the agency concluded that Diablo Canyon met the high standards that the NRC sets for safety and security. And this is based on all the performance indicators as well as inspection findings being green during the 2009 inspection process. Now, I'd also like to talk a little bit about what we call a substantive cross-cutting issue. And just as in, similar to the regulatory framework, I'll provide a little bit of background. In June of 2006, the NRC included a review of safety culture in the annual assessment process. Our review of safety culture actually begins when inspectors are performing the various inspections. When an inspector identifies a performance deficiency that leads to a finding, that finding is evaluated to what we call a cross-cutting aspect. That cross-cutting aspect is a part of a safety culture reference that and the NRC has a concern that a licensee is not adequately evaluating or dealing with that theme, we may recommend a substantive cross-cutting issue. Now, the purpose of a substantive cross-cutting issue is to draw the attention of the licensee and inspection resources to deal with this underlying theme before it becomes a more significant concern. For 2009, the NRC did identify a substantive cross-cutting issue in the area of problem identification and resolution. And this is specifically associated with the theme of problem evaluation. So this theme first identified this theme in 2008, and then it continued through 2009. Now, as a result of this substantive cross-cutting issue, we planned to provide an emphasis in our ongoing inspection program to focus on Pacific Gas and Electric's processes for problem evaluation. Now, as we step back and we look at our inspection plans for 2010, we're going to continue with the same level of aggressive inspections at Diablo Canyon. This is that baseline inspection program that would be driven by our action matrix, you know, being that all performance indicators are green as well as inspection findings. But we're going to include the additional focus on causal evaluations during inspection activities. We're going to conduct additional inspections in the area of refueling with the upcoming refueling outage on Unit 1, as well as the reactor head replacement on Unit 1. And we're going to conduct an additional inspection to evaluate the causes and corrective actions with an adverse trend associated with, and I'm going to call this administrative licensing issues. During the course of the assessment cycle, we identified that PG&E had made changes to the plant without prior NRC approval when it was required, did not maintain their current licensing basis documentation current, and then failed to report some events. So based on this trend, we're going to go ahead and spend a little bit of extra time and try to understand the causes and corrective actions associated with that. And with that, I'd like to turn
to your feedback in problem evaluation thoroughness. We accept that feedback. We agree with that feedback. That's an area where we need to improve our performance, and we take that issue very seriously as well. We did a root cause analysis to identify the causes of our shortfalls in performing in our evaluation programs. The primary programs where we identified, as did you, the areas to improve our performance were the 5059 plant change evaluation process and our licensing basis documentation. I'd like to ask Mr. Sharp to say a few words about those programs and what we've done and what we're doing to improve our performance there. Lauren?
We did, as Diablo Canyon, recognize that we had a root cause to identify the problem, evaluation, and thoroughness. The root cause team identified that we had problem understanding the full scope of questions, as well as the intent sometimes of the question being asked. And as we proceeded forward, we identified the lessons learned from that and created a process of training for all the staff that were associated with that particular activity to ensure that, number one, they understand the scope of the question being asked, as well as verifying the licensing and design basis before we respond to a question, and then to properly respond to those associated issues. Number two, I'd like to say, as a part of that activity, we also had a contributing cause, as Ken mentioned, the 5059. We did a number of actions in this area. The first one was we brought in a peer that did a program review of our 5059 process. We modified and revised the process. We identified a new process owner for this Libby licensing basis. We also added a technical review for our vendor supplied documents, and we added a quality review board also for looking at documents that are produced by the licensing basis process. And lastly, most importantly, we brought in an industry recognized expert, and he performed training for all the staff that have that qualification, as well as the leaders, to make sure that they could not retain their qualification after March until they achieved that training. And lastly, I'd like to talk a little bit to one of the items that Dr. Peck mentioned associated with licensing basis. We in the past quarter have recognized an increasing trend in the number of licensing basis documentation, as well as our modifications, the SSERs and SERs that are provided by the staff. So that's a very large process, and it will be going over nearly 30 years of NRC correspondence plus almost 5,000 pages of FSAR licensing basis. We believe that these actions are the foundations of what's required to make sure that we move forward to resolve the thoroughness of our problem evaluation process.
Thanks, Lauren. So as I said earlier, we did a root cause analysis. Lauren described what we've done in the plant change evaluation or 5059 process, but to ensure that we had a broad enough focus on our problem evaluation issues, we did an extensive condition review as part of that root cause analysis, and that did identify some areas to improve in other programs, such as the FSAR update process, such as the reportability determination process. We see a strong link between the issues surrounding the plant change design process, the licensing basis documentation issues, and our performance in some of those other programs that also have an evaluative nature. So we are absolutely committed to improving our performance in those programs. As Lauren said, in the 5059 program, we've retrained all of our folks. Anybody that had a qualification to perform a plant design change evaluation either received the additional training or their qualification was removed. We've made a number of other procedure changes relative to the evaluation programs and various processes. Any that haven't been done will be done by the end of this week, and we expect to see substantial improvement. And then I would wrap up by saying, back to my original message, we are absolutely committed to the daily operation of the plant in a safe manner that protects public health and safety. We know that's our responsibility, and we take that very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. If I could ask, in your root cause evaluation and in the extended condition review that you had mentioned, had you identified any correlation or impact on operability evaluations? Did you see any issues with operability evaluations related to problem evaluation?
Yeah, so your question was issues for which an operability evaluation was done. We have a program procedure that will be changed by the end of this week. And again, there is a link to be able to do a really great operability evaluation and having solid licensing basis documentation. So yes, we are improving the operability process.
I had a follow-on question to the 5059 evaluation, corrective actions you're taking. I know what we have in mind for coming out and doing additional inspections in that area. I'm curious to hear from you as to what Diablo believes success looks like with respect to improvements in the 5059 program.
Well, for an interim measure, we have added an additional review with one of our managers to be reviewing all of the 5059 products and processes as a part of the process for an interim measure. But we are, as we mentioned before, looking at improving that program on 5059. As I mentioned earlier in my remarks, we revised the 5059 program to make sure it was up and aligned with the industry experts in the process and how we go about doing a 5059, and we provided that more in-depth training on how the industry experts do 5059s in today. So in both areas, I think, as Ken mentioned, again, we need to remain on the top end of the accurate training for the day-to-day activities as well as a process that maintains that.
Yeah, just to continue the discussion a little more. So I understand you've revised programs, procedures, you've implemented some training, you're sending the staff through training. But have you developed some type of performance measure or metric, or do you have some type of quality assurance audit that's going to come in and do a back-end review to give you some feedback as to whether or not you're making progress and meeting the goals of the facility?
That's true. We have a number of those. We have the quality review board, as I mentioned before. They're also looking at the quality of the products besides the additional initial compensatory action we took with the additional manager. We have metrics in the program that we'll be looking at in our monthly station reviews to make sure that our programs are on track and are achieving the performance that we anticipate.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's important to delineate what those measures and metrics are and keep those in place in order to sustain the program.
It is ongoing right now. It's in two phases. The first phase will be completing our two systems of closed cooling water and ox feed water, and then we'll start phase two, and it will have a duration for totally completing at the end of 2014. Just due to the vast quantity of material that has to be reviewed and corrected as appropriate.
Okay, and that 2014 is for the closed cooling water and...
No, that's all systems, all chapters, all FSAR, all NRC correspondence, okay. All modifications, okay. All Libby screens and the evaluations.
Okay. All right, thank you.
While this is a meeting between the NRC and PG&E, I just wanted to clarify, we use a little bit of jargon here, and when we talk about 5059 is a rule that's entitled 10 of the Code of Federal Regulations, and what that rule allows PG&E to make certain changes in their facility without prior NRC approval if it meets certain tests. And in the conditions that we're talking about here is where PG&E had made those changes that should have required NRC approval and didn't get that because the evaluation wasn't done properly. We also talked about operability, and just for information, in a nuclear plant, we have defense in depth, we have a lot of redundancy, and we have a document, it's called the technical specifications, that basically preserves the integrity of the assumption that this equipment is going to be available. When there's something wrong with a piece of equipment, it may be a very minor problem, or it may affect the function of that equipment. And when we talk about operability reviews, we're basically talking about the plant staff's evaluation of this non-conforming condition or this whatever's wrong with this piece of equipment to make a determination on whether it can still perform its function as credited in the accident analysis. So just way of background to clarify that.
That essentially, I think, concludes Michael's presentation and the response from the facility. I did want to reemphasize a few points that I heard along the way. As Michael mentioned, we assess licensee performance twice per year. We go through the license signs, the findings. Nevertheless, we did have some concerns with some challenges that are facing Diablo Canyon, and the facility talked about those tonight. Primarily, they involved the 5059 evaluation process that Michael described, the operability evaluation process that Michael touched on a little bit, and this design verification review that the facility is embarking on. We think that those items can be addressed within the licensee's corrective action program. That's a fundamental core of the reactor oversight process, is for the licensee to identify and correct their problems, and the NRC comes in and independently verifies their ability to implement their programs and processes. And the corrective action program is one key program and process, and we focus on that quite a bit. But notwithstanding our confidence in the ability to implement the corrective action program and deal with these issues, as Michael mentioned earlier, we do plan to implement additional inspection activity in these areas that will specifically target the effectiveness of those corrective actions. We'll focus on your performance measures and your metrics to make sure they're meaningful and that they provide an accurate reflection of performance, be it you're getting better or you're not getting better with respect to those corrective actions. And I think, Jeff, with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Roy.
Oh.
All right. I was going to put up a slide here. I'd like to mention there are some upcoming meetings that we're going to be having in the area in September. In a few months here, we'll be having a seismic workshop. It'll be a conference-style meeting with an opportunity for the public to interact with experts in the field of seismology and seismic events. And that's, right now it looks like it'll likely be right here in the September time frame. Additionally, in later this year, we'll have a couple of license renewal public meetings. Coming up in the fall, there'll be a license renewal inspection exit from the inspection activities conducted at the site. Additionally, we'll have the environmental audit public meeting, which will be held in December. Like Ken mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we have done things slightly differently this year than we have done in the past. We are going to have another open house session immediately following this. In some of our previous meetings, we had question cards. We did receive several cards that did not have contact information included on them. I'd just like to pass along, if for the license renewal folks, we'll be including those comment cards as part of the scope of the review, and they will be addressed in the environmental report when it comes out. And with that, Ken?
Okay, good evening once again. For those of you who were not here at the beginning, when I introduced myself, my name is Ken Bailey, and I'm the facilitator for this evening's session. Before we actually transition to the question period, for those of you who had cards and did not want to specifically address your questions yourself, you can please turn those cards into me now. If you raise your hand, I will pick up those cards and see to them that we give them to the panel. Okay. Okay. Yeah. This is not the only time you can do that. Until we conclude, if you have a card that you would like to turn in that you would not like to specifically address the question yourself, you are free to give me that card, and I will make sure the panel receives it and address your question. At this time, we will begin the question period. As mentioned, we will try to answer as many questions as we can. Should we not be able to due to time, then we will have a session, an additional session, open house session immediately following this meeting in the room adjourning again outside the door to the right, where you can address your questions specifically with the subject matter experts who will be set up at with specific. If you have a question, please raise your hand. I will come to you with the mic. I will maintain the mic while you address your questions. Please try to limit your question to 2 to 3 minutes so that we can afford everyone the opportunity to address their question, to have their question addressed. Okay? We will begin at this time. Yes, ma'am. Please state your name and who you represent, ma'am.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Daniela Arnon, and I'm a resident of the city of San Luis Obispo. And my question has to do with there's a very well-renowned nuclear scientist who wrote a book that's called Carbon Free, Nuclear Free. And in it, I
do know that the NRC has evaluated the storage of spent fuel, if that's what you're referring to, and the spent fuel pools and for dry cask storage, and we have found that to be acceptable. And we do have a specialist that's available tonight. You know, he may be more familiar with that book and can provide you some more direct feedback at the open house session later on. But the idea here was to take questions on current plant performance and specialist-type questions like that to try to deal with those in the open house one-on-one where we have the expert available to do that. Thank you.
I'm Jane Swanson, spokesperson, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. The June 23rd alert at the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant fits into a years-long pattern showing PG&E's inability to manage its two aging reactors and the radioactive waste that has been accumulating there since 1984. Diablo was designed in the 60s and out of date by the time it began operations in the mid-80s. And as aging components have been replaced, procedures necessary to run the plant safely and in compliance with NRC requirements are constantly changing, leading to confusion and errors. This statement was backed up well by the report from the inspector and from PG&E. The public needs to know that violations classified as non-cited or green, as shown on the screen, nevertheless do have implications for safety. Non-cited merely means that the problems have been entered into the corrective action program. Green is assigned to problems that may have had the potential for serious safety consequences if the problem did not in fact result in a dangerous situation. In other words, it's green if we were all lucky. The NRC assigns these problems to PG&E's corrective action program, but going through the corrective action program does not ensure that any given problem will be resolved permanently. On the contrary, many problems reoccur with alarming regularity. Examples of mismanagement or inability to manage Diablo cited in the NRC inspection report covering January 1 through March 27, and I'll expect the inspectors to correct me. That's huge. If PG&E's actions are such that the NRC can't regulate the plant properly, Mothers for Peace considers that an area of great concern, fundamental. The NRC inspection report also had four findings of, and I quote again, cross-cutting aspects in the area of problem identification and resolution associated with the corrective action program component, and that was explained by Inspector Peck also. PG&E recognizes that problem. I have in my possession a page from a report that PG&E presented to the Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee just a month ago, and I'll wrap it up. Thank you. And in that, PG&E states in writing that a contributing factor is that cultural norms do not pursue excellence. In conclusion, Mothers for Peace draws two conclusions from this spiral downward in the management of Diablo. Number one, it is not the proper time for PG&E to be applying for a 20 years license renewal. And number two, the NRC needs to take more drastic steps to assure public safety. I think it would be appropriate, since PG&E has trouble managing the plant, for the NRC to withdraw the current operating license until all the managers go back to school and learn to implement the requirements of operating that plant. A citizen group like Mothers for Peace should not have to raise money to force the NRC to comply with federal law and to better protect public safety, but that's exactly what we have been doing for 37 years. We said in 1973 that Diablo should not have been built next to an active major earthquake fault. And we say it now in the face of PG&E's ongoing inability to manage Diablo in compliance with regulations. What we say is no Diablo.
Thank you. Okay. Once again, as we continue on, I would like to remind you to try to minimize your questions or your comments to 2 to 3 minutes. Although you feel that what you have to say is very important, so does everybody else who's sitting in the audience. We do not want to minimize their chance at having the opportunity to present their case as well as you had the opportunity to present your case.
I'd like to respond to several of the issues that were brought up by Ms. Swanson, if I could. First, I'd like to do the disclaimer that issues that are currently to address the obsolescence type of issues, we don't know at this point what caused that particular valve to malfunction. That's being evaluated by PG&E now forensically. But it did malfunction while it was being tested as part of an upgrade. The valve was brand new, basically. So I don't know that would be a symptom of an aging issue. On the seismic interaction problem, actually Tony had done some work on that. I believe we have, you correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't we talk about that as being we call that a P1 delta, but a corrective action issue. So in that, a particular problem is we were dispositioning in it using our regulatory framework. We recognized that had been a repeat issue, that the corrective actions in the past hasn't been effective to necessarily turn that particular issue around. And we wanted to flag that to both PG&E and the public that there's needed attention in this particular. And that's part of that safety culture assessment that I had talked about that we started doing in 2006. Now, as far as the significance of any particular finding, we have a very formalized process that looks at the significance of each particular inspection finding, very rigorous, and it looks at considers both primarily the actual consequence of that particular condition, but also considers the potential consequence. And in the case of the seismic interaction issues, while it was a performance deficiency and did have an adverse effect on plant safety, the overall effect was a very low safety significance. Given the overall effect on that. Traditional enforcement issues. This is in our reactor oversight process, which began in April of 2000, was a new approach to how we regulate basically four power reactors. So when we use the term traditional enforcement in the inspection program, what we're basically saying is we're using that process that's external of this reactor oversight process, the same type of process that we would use for non-reactor licensees. That's where that comes from. And under the reactor oversight process, we make some basic assumptions about certain regulatory processes being function that I talked about at the end of the presentation was basically focused to look at those types of issues that fall outside of the reactor oversight process. In fact, the procedure is called, I think it's three or more traditional level four traditional enforcement issues within a 12-month period. So it's to focus on those parts that we don't handle as part of that ROP. And I think I got, did I miss anything?
Okay, next question. Yes, sir.
Mayor of Los Osos, when it's time to do so, how does the NRC shut down Diablo Canyon?
I'm trying to bound the question. So, are you talking at the end of the operating life of the facility, or if something were to occur during the operating life of the facility?
When you find that there's a significant safety issue that PG&E can no longer correct, and it's time to shut that power plant down, how would you do so?
Yeah, we actually have two processes that we evaluate whether or not facilities should be issued an order to cease operation. Michael described the first process, which is the action matrix. We have a column within the action matrix for plants that have received multiple safety significant findings, or it could be a single safety significant finding, would place them in the column of the action matrix where the agency would issue a shutdown order. The second process is what we refer to as our manual chapter 0350 process, which essentially is for plants that may have an event that causes that plant to shut down. We would place a shutdown order on that facility until we better understood the causes and the safety significance behind the issues that led to that facility event. So those are the two processes we have in place to do that.
Next question.
This group, can we move towards A, the new generation of reactors is emphasizing passive versus active safety measures. To what extent can we move towards improved passive safety measures at Diablo, such as, and this is a purely amateur suggestion, the new Westinghouse React 1000 reactor uses gravity-fed water as emergency cooling by putting the water tank on the top of the dome. Well, I'm sure you can't do that for seismic reasons here, but could we possibly have such a similar water storage on the side of the hillside, which would improve safety? I illustrate purely, are there such passive measures that could be incorporated to upgrade at this point? Second question would be, because of the fiasco of the claims that the nuclear fuel is so hazardous, which are simply not supported by any scientific evidence, can we reduce the level of fuel storage, the intensity of fuel storage in the used fuel pools by getting this fuel out of the pool into the concrete cast storage more rapidly? And the third point I would make is that a criticism which has some validity is that used fuel can conceivably be used to make a crude nuclear weapon. That depends upon largely the ratio of plutonium-239 to plutonium-240. The longer the burn-up in the reactor, the higher the levels of your plutonium-240, and the less desirable it becomes. To what extent can we load the dice of the fuel cycle in favor of longer burn-up times and/or recycled fuel, hence diminishing the attractiveness of spent fuel for nuclear terrorism? I hope these issues are not outside the scope of this meeting. Thank you.
Well, two of the questions involve design issues. I'll just point out for the first one, Diablo, like all the other currently operating Westinghouse facilities, does have a passive feature with their safety injection tanks or safety injection accumulators that don't have an answer for fuel design. I don't think maybe Michael does, right?
When we talk about plutonium being attractive for weapons, we look at the PU-239 to total PU, and specifically PU-240. When that number drops below 80%, we say it's undesirable for weapons, and that's due to the high spontaneous fission rate of PU-240. The bottom line is, for a plant like Diablo Canyon, that that crosses the path at about 200, we call it 200 effective full power days of operation, where that the plutonium in that spent fuel is no longer, we say it, attractive for application in a nuclear weapon.
Okay, next question.
Did anybody have questions on cards or comments on cards? So we can take those while we're waiting for the verbal questions, at least.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Yes, regarding the storage of the spent fuel in the dry casks, question number one, how long is that fuel safely stored in those casks? I keep hearing you guys say in 20 years or something like that. With Yucca Mountain no longer viable, what happens in, let's say, 80 years? And there's still no place for that spent fuel to go, and it's sitting on our coast here. How often is that going to have to be repackaged, taken in and out of the pools, a very unsafe operation?
With regard to dry cask storage, the dry casks are licensed for 20 years. There is an option to available for relicensing. I believe it has been analyzed, correct if I'm wrong, up to 60 years. But other than that, as you mentioned, actually the loading of the cask, we do have the procedures for that and provide the oversight that it, I believe it can be safely stored and safely loaded. And
yeah, I think the question over here was what happens at 60 years or something to that effect. The agency actually believes those casks will last longer than that. We do.
My name is Jill Zamek, and I'm board member of the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. I reside in Arroyo Grande and work in Oceano. Recent U.S. history has given us over 20 people killed in a coal accident in West Virginia. The BP oil spill in the Gulf killed 11 and continues to cause monumental and widespread environmental damage. But these horrendous accidents would look insignificant compared to the potential catastrophic environmental effects of a major radioactive release from a nuclear power plant. And we've had events to warn us of the risks, Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, but our society has a very short memory for unpleasant reminders. The job of the Mothers for Peace is to continue to monitor plant operation and compliance with federal law. Tonight's topic is the 2009 annual performance review of Diablo Canyon, and Mothers for Peace is alarmed by what the NRC has labeled a negative trend. In its inspections report, the NRC has documented a multitude of examples of poor problem evaluation, ineffective corrective actions, inadequate design documentation, and poor implementation of administrative regulatory programs, all which could affect the operability of required equipment, interfere with the functionality of aging structures and components, and raise unreviewed safety questions. The most recent NRC inspection report of April 29, 2010, provides findings between January and March. Some of these findings in this report show more of the same problems, multiple failures to identify and resolve problems. Mothers for Peace remains concerned that PG&E is not operating in a manner that adequately protects the health and safety of our lives and our environment. This is one reason of many for Mothers for Peace objection to license renewal.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate that during our assessment process, we did conclude that Diablo Canyon was safe to operate the facility. They do have some challenges with implementation of the corrective action program. We don't see those challenges as impeding their ability to make the course corrections that we'd like to see made. And we do have independent inspection for a reason, and that's to ensure that facilities such as Diablo and all those others across the country do implement our high standards of safety performance. And we verify that on a day-to-day basis. And we believe that Diablo Canyon meets our high standards of safety performance.
knows there's no good time, but Tuesday night's kind of bad. There's a lot of council meetings and things like that, and six is kind of bad. So I don't want to sound negative here. Two, ownership of the actual plant itself and of the license itself and who the licensee is. In 2003, there apparently was an attempt involving the California Public Utility Commission by PG&E to transfer the plant to Diablo Canyon Power Plant, DCPP, which was then to be leased to GEM or GEN or some outfit like this. And I don't know whether, I can't stay on top of these things, but it looks like an attempt to avoid liability. So I'd like to know what the status of who owns this? Who's the licensee? Did this DCPP thing happen? The GEM, leasing it out to GEM or GEN? So that's one. Two, PG&E's motto at Diablo Canyon goes something like this, and I just wish I could remember, but it's keeping a safe distance. Something like that is the mark of a smart worker. But is PG&E, DCPP, GEN, GEM doing that? Or is this maybe just lip service? Therefore, what are the exact distances involved below? A, the distance above sea level to the lowest part of the reactor structure and to that pond that keeps the spent fuel rods in it. Above sea level, the distance from the bluff, from the ocean in, that part, which is not much. And then also the elevation and distance back up the canyon there to the cask area. Now that's as far as I've gotten with. I got a bunch of questions, but I don't want to dominate the proceedings here. So
we still have time. We may have the opportunity to come back to you,
all
sir.
Right. I'm gonna take the easy one first on the timing of the meeting. Maybe it's not an easy one, but we received quite a bit of feedback on when to have the meeting, have multiple meetings, who to bring out, and this was the best fit we could find. So we decided to do the open house this morning. We started at 10, we went till 1 o'clock to give folks a chance to come out and chat with us one-on-one. I don't know, maybe so. I'll offer that up to you with respect to the distances, Michael. Unless you know each and every one of those, I don't. But if you can give us that note card later on with some contact information, we'll make sure we get back with you with what those elevations are. I know I don't know those, but Michael, you can take a crack at it.
The base of the containment is 85 feet above sea level. I believe the top of the refueling fuel is about 140 feet above sea level, and I think the spent fuel storage pad is about 300 feet above sea level, but our experts right here. And the answer to the other question is Pacific Gas and Electric is a licensee for the plant. There was some discussions about reorganization and bankruptcy and things like that back around that time frame, but today Pacific Gas and Electric is the license holder for the plant.
So there's no DCPP?
Mike, please.
The question was, is there a DCPP?
That's what Pacific Gas and Electric calls the plant, Diablo Canyon Power Plant. That's on the sign as you go in. That's the name of the facility.
Okay, I'm going to give Ms. Swanson a chance to address a comment or question from someone who sent it to her.
Hey, I just want to make sure, hey, Joe, if you need those elevations, please leave.
They're right.
All right, give us some contact information, and we'll make sure we get the right elevations back to you. So we gave you approximate elevations, but I want to make sure we get the exact ones back to you.
In a public hearing setting attested to, and not because I don't believe them. I've been down there and I'm standing there and I'm 45 feet above the water and I look over and the reactor's right there and it goes down deeper to the foundations of it. So I flat out don't believe them. I don't think they're correct. Where is the storage if it's 140 feet? That would mean that those ponds are 65 feet high or 55 feet higher. I'm concerned about tsunamis, with or without the earthquake. The operator error is just a nightmare waiting to happen, but that could be in Kansas. We don't know which one of them is going to go first. But Mother Earth is the big terrorist. Tsunamis, earthquakes. And why in the world would you consider extending the license 14 years in advance for a place that you would not license today? And if you don't extend it, as you should not, or you certainly shouldn't do anything for several years until all of this is sorted out, if you do not, then wouldn't that tell you that you need to shut it down now and not in 2024, 2025? Because if it's not safe to extend, it's not safe to let it operate for the balance. And for the fractional amount of power that we're getting, this is just way too risky. And my question is whether or not this discussion to be happening right now, not in a post-mortem environment. And this plant, do not extend this license. Thank you.
Just to provide a little bit of feedback, Jeff mentioned it earlier. We are going to do a seismic workshop in September, and we'll probably talk in more detail about tsunami hazard and earthquake hazard as it relates to Diablo Canyon. But the tsunami hazard has been evaluated and reevaluated. I had some my own specific staff go back and look at the tsunami hazard after one of my earlier public meetings here, and that Diablo Canyon was designed to withstand the predicted tsunami hazard for this area. With respect to the NRC would not license this facility if it had to do it all over again. With respect to new construction facilities, the only additional requirement that was really placed on them was to develop a probabilistic seismic hazards analysis. Provided the facility was able to demonstrate through design that it could construct and a facility to withstand the seismic interactions in the area, it would or could be licensed by the NRC.
Well, if I have a problem, you'll put me up down the
If you need to continue further discussion, the open house would be the perfect opportunity. Ms. Swanson?
Two sentences. Microphone went out.
It's still on.
Testing, is it working? Okay, again, Jane Swanson. I just have one or two sentences on behalf of Mothers for Peace in response to Troy Pruitt's just statement. At the May 26th ASLB hearing on license renewal, Mothers for Peace attorney Diane Curran did make a flat statement that we're missing the probabilistic risk assessment that you just referred to. When it comes to factoring in the newly discovered shoreline fault. So that requirement's there, and it's not fulfilled. And I know we're not discussing relicensing, but...
That requirement's in place for new facilities, not for currently licensed facilities.
I will give this to you in writing later. He is a professional geologist, a registered geophysicist, a certified engineering geologist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's worked for the Coastal Commission and many things, very qualified. I know nothing about tsunamis, but he has done the research, and he can document four tsunamis on the Central Coast of a height of 55 to 100 feet. The earliest of them being 1812, the most recent, I think it's 1913. There was one in 1907 that was 100 feet on the Central Coast. So when you said that the tsunami thing has been studied regarding Diablo Canyon, I'm wondering if there is a 100-foot tsunami, if there is a knowledge that wouldn't affect Diablo.
The topography in where Diablo Canyon is situated is different than the topography in the locations in the Central California region where those higher tsunami heights were reached.
Sir, let us have some other people have opportunity for a moment. Thank you.
Sharon Ripner, property owner and really close to Diablo Canyon. I want to ask a question, and then depending upon your answer, I have a follow-up for it. How many unannounced inspections do you have at Diablo Canyon?
The two resident inspectors that I have here, every inspection they do in the plant is unannounced.
We have a rule that's called immediate unfeathered access. We basically can go wherever we feel like we need to, talk to whoever we have access to, whoever we feel like we need to talk to. Basically, have complete access to the entire facility.
Next question, comment. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Michelle Flum, and I am a resident of San Luis Obispo. And due to the impact on marine life, recently it was deemed that California facilities will no longer be able to use it once through cooling. And I'm wondering what PG&E plans to do about that new ruling. Thank you.
We make sure that whatever method they do ultimately choose is safe for the facility operation.
Okay. Question, comments? Okay. There being no further questions or comments at this time, we would like to extend the invitation. Okay.
My name's June Cochran. I'm from Shell Beach. We were just at a hearing, and Alex Carlin, who's the Atomic Safety Licensing Board Chair, made a quote that I thought was interesting. He said, past performances indicate future performances. And in the past, I've gone to a lot of independent safety committee meetings, and there always seems to be, well, you know, we have 50 issues a day that come before us as corrective action, and that's a huge number to me. And then what do? Well, we train them again. And then sometimes the same things occur more than once, more than twice. And that's pretty disturbing to me. At the February 11th meeting, one committee member asked why it takes 5 years to correct some unhealthy systems, such as the fire protection system. And you mentioned this today that you didn't know what causes the valve to misfunction that just happened on Thursday. There was a stuck fuel rod for a long period of time, and that wasn't fixed for quite some time. I found it kind of ironic that the failure of the interlock switch happened to be a corrective action that revised procedures to simplify them, and ironically this caused the situation in that term. So the corrective action actually caused the problem. There's transformer problems, there's leaks, several human performance errors over the years. There was one in 2002, did a study on the bolt and coupling failure, but they didn't correct it. So they did a study on it. It's been on the corrective action process for 30 years. Our last meeting we had, I asked about what PG&E is going to do to cut $400,000 from its budget this year, as it's been dictated to do. And they didn't have an answer for that. So I'm wondering if maybe the CEO, who got $10 million a year this year, is going to donate some money to PG&E so that they don't have to compromise safety by cutting safety procedures or personnel. Thank you.
I think what I want to address out of that is the corrective action program elements. one of It's a key foundation. It's a key building block within the nuclear industry, not just one that the NRC expects licensees to have, but we expect every nuclear plant operator to have a robust corrective action program. And part of that is identifying any and every problem, deficiency, no matter how small it is, and getting it into the corrective action system and getting it evaluated. I don't know of any other industry that goes through that level of effort to identify problems at the very smallest level. And it doesn't matter if it's a safety-related issue, a non-safety-related issue. It could be there's a sharp edge on the coke machine. It could be there's an oil leak on a safety-related pump. It doesn't matter. They all go into the corrective action program. So 50 deficiencies going into a corrective action program in a day, that's a pretty typical number. And you'd see that at any power plant in the nation, about 50 a day, if not more, going into that corrective action program to be addressed. And many things don't have safety significance, they come in, they get fixed, and they get trended. And if it comes in again, they look at it and say, you know what, we just had another one of these a couple of months ago. Is there something bigger going on here that we need to evaluate? And they will invest their resources to go do the follow-up reviews. And we inspect and hold them accountable to that standard. We go in and make sure that they're identifying trends and that they're identifying those low-level problems. So that's an expectation we have of industry, and that's the one that industry has actually taken and by all rights exceeded what the minimal standards are that the NRC has for corrective action programs.
And if the left hand knows what the right hand's doing,
yeah, I don't need a little bit more context behind that in terms of the compartmentalization. Talk on the NRC side or
I don't even see anyone from the NRC here.
That we're all NRC folks. All of us are with the NRC.
It says you're resident inspectors.
Right. So these two gentlemen work for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They report to our office out of Arlington, Texas, and they're here every day, day in and day out, doing unannounced inspections of the facility. These two gentlemen report to Jeff, who's their immediate supervisor. Jeff oversees the inspection at three different nuclear facilities in the western half of the United States.
And the NRC Commission is in Washington, D.C., and this guy's down in Texas, and there's 50 plants across the country?
Yeah, that's right. So we have our headquarters is in Washington, D.C., and they do primarily the licensing of the facilities as well as the program policy development. We have four regional offices, one of which is in Arlington, Texas, and we're responsible for implementation of the inspection programs. And we have a couple of people here happy to talk with you about how the NRC is organized and laid out afterwards. But
I might have some idea of that already.
Okay.
You had another comment, sir? Yes, ma'am.
Daniela Arnon again, resident of the city of San Luis Obispo. Are you aware that one nuclear power plant in Scotland was replaced by 26 wind generators? And I just to put a little seed there, if we can replace nuclear power plants with wind generators, that's amazing. Maybe that's what we should be doing instead of leaving this toxic waste for 100,000 years to our children and our children's children and our children's children's children. And as was mentioned, there are leaks. I don't think it's safe.
Thank you, ma'am. That question is a little beyond the scope. There are definitely alternatives.
Now, on this question of tsunamis, I've talked about them until I'm blue in the face. The main one is the oil port tsunami. I live there, Troy. It's a shouting distance away from Diablo. It's not somewhere in Central California. The 1878 tsunami just trashed Avila. Okay, it wiped out two of the piers, and it did lots of damage. And those things are all, they could be studied from on a forensic basis to find out how high they went up. The one in Oil Port, which is what's the previous name of Sunset Palisades, and if this hadn't happened, it would be a refinery, and I wouldn't be living there. Okay, it was a refinery. There was one in, I have Lou's, Lou Blank is a brilliant person, and he just isn't well enough to make it here. I have a copy of his abstract, and I don't want to sound like Joe McCarthy. You know, I have the names of 200 communists in the State Department, but I do have the abstract. Furthermore, I've submitted it to you, Troy, to you, Dr. Peck, on numerous occasions, and I've talked about it, I've mentioned it, I sent it through, I don't even know what the status of the safety board. I sent it to all this safety board panel, licensing panel people. And, I mean, you never hear anything back about anything. But I don't, I want somebody, in this business, we should be talking here together, not in these little coffee clatch one-on-one deals. That's what we want. We want open agreements openly arrived at. And where there are statements made with precision, I am disputing these altitude and distance. I am flat out disputing them. I would like them to be confirmed and verified. And so I won't take any more time, but this is looking a lot like a charade, and I would like some kind of, you're saying, oh, the final meeting will be in December, and it sounds to me like it's a foregone conclusion that these people are going to get an extension, and we need to know that. I thought before you would make a decision before the end of March, you had said, you know, as to whether you would extend this process to take into account these questions of earthquakes and tsunamis. And I don't think anybody's hearing us. So I think that we, the people around here, are going to have to somehow organize ourselves, because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is looking in more and more like a nuclear regulatory charade. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Joe, what I will do is have my staff that's working on the seismic workshop on the sec. Real quick, the NRC specialists that are in the room, if I can get you guys to stand up real quickly so the folks know who you are. We have Ray Keller. Ray Keller is the ISPC specialist. We have Mike Shannon and Paul Peduzzi. They're both the security specialists that we brought with us. Steve Gary. Gary is a specialist in radiation protection. Christy Dennison, she's who we brought along to handle the seismic concerns tonight. And Drew, I think most of you have met Drew. Drew handles the license renewal proceedings out here for Diablo Canyon. Who did I miss? I missed Nate Fair. He's also out here with the license renewal folks. In the back, of course, we brought Laura and Victor back out here with us, or our public affairs staff, and they're free to interact with you as well. And then Mothers for Peace also chose to set up a table in the open house, and so they're available. PG&E, I think, will have representatives at a table tonight. And is that it? We had some other folks from FEMA in the county here earlier this morning. I don't know if they came back out tonight or not. Ron's here in the back. Okay. So, all right. And with that, I think we'll move over to the open house. Thank you much.